Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now, during our Black Friday sale, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed. Plus special financing. Limited time. To find a store near you, visit sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Box Check. I am your host, Matt Brady, known on the internet as Super Gains Bros, joined today by DG. You know, I think you and I actually kind of started TikTok around roughly the same time, because I remember when I really started getting into it, you were somebody who I would see a lot, right? And so I was like, wow, I need to get this girl on the podcast and talk with her, because you're going for like a complete PS1 collection. Right. And I would, honest to God, say that I think you are probably one of, if not the best source on the internet for PlayStation 1, like specifically, just because you have such a large collection and it's going. So super excited to talk today. So, hey, how are you doing? Are you doing okay? How's today going for you?
Fabulous, man. Great day. Sunday. Gonna kick back and actually play games later. Apparently, I'm gonna be playing Trombone this evening, because I do stream on Twitch too. So that's what they voted for. So we're gonna be diving into that for the first time tonight. And I'm excited.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Well, yeah, like I said, I think, you know, you started on TikTok right around the same time I did. And I remember I'd see some of your videos and stuff like that. And you, at first I was like, oh, there's that sort of, there's that girl who sort of yells about video games, right? I think that's what sort of like initially caught me on. Especially, I think you're also probably known for your hate of Resident Evil 4. Very warranted. I think, you know, I think that's fair. We'll talk a little about that as well.
Sure.
But yeah, I would say that, you know, you're definitely, I think PlayStation 1 is probably what I would say most people, at least from what I see, I feel like probably know you for on TikTok and Twitch and stuff like that as well. Yeah. So I guess we'll just start in like kind of what got you into PlayStation 1 collecting. And I know you were kind of collecting other stuff there for a while. And then I remember you saying on Twitter, you made another post, or it was a live or something where you're talking about, yeah, I think I'm just going to focus on PlayStation 1.
Yeah, so PlayStation, initially my dad bought our very first PlayStation 1. So that kind of made my shift toward the PlayStation era. And then whenever PS3 came out, I kind of fell off of PlayStation. But when PS4 came out, I came back to PlayStation, and I've been PlayStation pretty much ever since then, because PS3 didn't really have a lot to offer, honestly, for me personally, whenever it came to PlayStation. But as far as the collecting aspect, I decided to go for a full PS1 collection a couple of years ago because of the fact that I love the system. It's been my favorite system of all time. There's so many games that I love playing on there, especially RPGs, because RPGs are my favorite genre along next to survival horror titles. So naturally, that was the obvious choice for me to go for a complete set. And another thing that I wanted to do, I wanted to share my love with the system too. So naturally, I'm going to talk about the games as I play them. And that's one thing I want to point out. I don't talk about stuff unless I play it. I want to play every single game that I own, including the sports titles, which I have played a couple of them already because they've been requested, so we play them. And there's a lot I missed out on as a kid. So naturally, and especially RPGs, like the Lunar games, for example, I didn't play those growing up, and I finally got a chance to play the PS1 ports, and they made my top 20 games of all time. So it's a good thing to go for a full set, because you get to actually play some of the classics that you didn't have growing up. But at the same time, it can be very expensive to do that too. But I think that honestly, it's better for me to go for physical collection versus digital, because I like to actually hold the game, play it, kind of like how I was whenever I was a kid. It's a nostalgia thing too. So that's mainly why I wanted to go for a full set. And I do still collect other things for like Dreamcast, Wii U. I'm going for full sets of those too, but loosely here and there. Like I just picked up a few games for Dreamcast at Torg. I picked up Berserk, and then I also finally picked up Soul Calibur, because that was the only one I didn't have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, because I think you and I are the same age. And so that means, you know, PlayStation 1, you know, it came out mid-90s. So you obviously, I know you said Chrono Trigger is one of your favorite games ever on your channel. And so were you, you had Super Nintendo first and then you got the PlayStation when it came out? Yeah, okay.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So what was your, was the, like, did you play NES, like Genesis
I did.
First?
Well, my first ever console was an Atari 2600. My first game that I remember playing personally was Dig Dug, because my dad is a big gamer. So he actually got me into gaming, and then it shifted. So we had an NES because my grandparents actually had one. My grandma bought it for my grandpa while he was recovering. So whenever he got better, the kids took it over. And then that followed with Super Nintendo, Genesis. So that's pretty much how the line shifted whenever it came to video games. So I do still have my copy of Chrono Trigger from Super Nintendo from whenever I was a kid. It's actually still over there. But no box, just a manual and just the cartridge itself. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've talked to other people about this as well when it comes to Super Nintendo and NES collecting. I feel like I've just hit the point to where I know there are resources online where you can print your own labels and all those things. Right. But I feel like I'm just like card only.
Yeah, I honestly don't mind cart only anymore because it's one, it's a lot cheaper. And then two, you know, I don't mind reproduction boxes and stuff. I've seen those. I don't have any myself. I do have some box Super Nintendo games, but I have like, I think four or five, that's it. But I don't really see the point in getting like the reproduction boxes. Now, reproduction cases for PS1, that's a little different. Yeah, because where I'm going for a full set, and I've came across a lot of stuff loose. Like Xenogears, for example, this is my second copy of Xenogears that I've had because my other one, sadly, in the past got pawned off by an ex. I don't want to go into that, but if you want to, you can.
That happens. That happens.
Yeah, it sucks because he pawned off half my collection, and I've been rebuilding ever since then. Man, I used to have Haunting Ground. I'm sorry, I used to have Rule of Rose, and that game is like $800 now.
It happens. And, you know, I over the years, you know, if I could go back and tell a younger version of myself, you know, don't trade in a black label Final Fantasy VII for, you know, something else or, you know, stuff like that. Ooh, man, the decisions I would go back and change, you know, but
exactly.
It's the, for those, the Nintendo systems, man, I just, the cardboard boxes, they just break down. They're not as good. I'm just so not interested in, but I definitely agree for PlayStation, especially because a lot of those old jewel cases are just so fragile and they chip and break. And I don't see anything wrong with having, you know, like reproduction cases for those whatsoever.
Yeah. It makes it look nicer on the shelf. And plus it protects the game itself. It's not a bad thing to put it in a CD binder, which some of mine are still in there until I get a reproduction case, but trying to go out and find the actual authentic case with just the manual and without the actual disc is it's not really easy to do because most of the time it will have the actual game in it along with everything else. And I don't need a second copy of the game, especially Xenogears. Like I said, for example, that game's like, I think about $100 to $150. So I'm like, nah.
I have a copy of it. And it's like, I don't need, I'm okay. You know, like the jewel case has like a crack in it, but it's like, it is what it is. But one of the things I want to ask you about this too, is at least one of the things I personally feel about the PlayStation 1. And I would argue that I think it's probably, if somebody wants to get into retro collecting, maybe, you know, especially now it's different because, you know, a lot of like people who are in their early teen, you know, a lot of people now who want to go retro collect, they're like looking at the PS2 because that was their first system, you know, certainly makes me feel old. you know, or like the 360 and makes me feel even older, but you know, so, but I think the PlayStation 1 is probably, if I were to argue, I would say it's the best system to start collecting for by the sheer fact that you have so much, it's so accessible because you can play on the original PlayStation 1. You can play on the PlayStation 2 and even the PlayStation 3, you can play as well. And you can even do HDMI if you want to go that route. So I think just in terms of sheer accessibility without trying to get into like, do I need a better CRT or do I need to get a scaler or a retro tank or any of those, you know, things. Do you play mostly on your PS3? Are you playing on a physical PS1?
I play on PS2. Like whenever I stream, I use my original, well, typically I've been using my original PS2. My dad bought it at launch, but lately I've been using my PS2 Slim. It's just a little bit easier to use because I've been having issues with my copy of Wild Arms for some reason. It likes to freeze, so I'll pop it up, put it back in, and pop the lid back down, is ready to go. So it's a little bit easier to do that because with the fat PS2, it doesn't like to do that. So that's one good thing about having the Slim is that if you have an issue with it freezing, you can just do that and it's good to go. But yeah, yes. Mainly it's my PS2 because I do stream mainly PS1 stuff, but I do also do PS2. And where I don't have a backwards compatible PS3 anymore that can play PS2, it's more the optimal way to actually for me to stream. So
how are you capturing it? Are you doing like component capture? Are you doing something to HDMI?
So basically what I use for my stream setup, it's pretty basic. I actually use, of course, like I said, the PS2. I have like the Elgato 60S Plus for my capture, you know, for my capture card. And then I use a mini AV to HDMI upscaler. That's it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Like,
okay.
I don't have like the retro tank or anything. I want to do that, but I haven't, you know, done
it. It's pretty pricey. It's pretty pricey. I hope that someday, and we'll have to see, you know, like there's the Polymega, which is that sort of, you know, it's another one of those like retro clone consoles, but you can use whatever. And then I just bought, or I pre-ordered, I should say, now I'm blanking on their name. The analog
N64 one.
The analog N64 was the one I was like, that's the one I really want because I was a PlayStation kid as well.
Right.
And I got my N64 at the end of that life cycle, when the Dreamcast came out. And so I was like, I felt like I missed out on so much of the Nintendo 64 life cycle. And so that's the one. So I hope at some point, if they could do a PlayStation 1, that would be freaking sweet, because then it could
be
4K. Certainly have to wait and see what they do with that. So okay, so you're playing on a PS2 Slim, which is great, and doing that stuff. So any game you've played in collecting that you didn't play growing up but now you think you have a strong attachment to?
Lunar Silver Star Story Complete, that one, and then Legend of Legaia. Those two I have pretty big, strong attachments to, especially the Lunar game, because I love the story, the character development. You know, it's a mixture of emotions. The OST alone, I have the big box edition, so you've got like all those little extras, because Working Designs was known for like going over the top with that stuff. So it's one of my favorite games now, top 20. So I definitely have an attachment to that one for a lot of reasons.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and you didn't play that as a kid, and just like now through collecting, just like
that's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome, because that's why I feel like I said with N64 is there's some games that like Wave Race is one for me. I never played it as a kid. It's arguably like my favorite game ever.
Yeah,
I freaking love Wave Race, and it's like I remember that I was at one point I was working on this list, and I was doing like a top 100 list for my YouTube channel of like Game Boy Advance games actually, and I played F-Zero like GP Legend and F-Zero one. I forget what it is, but there's the two F-Zero games, and I was playing with those, and I was like, oh my God, I would have loved this as a kid. Yeah. And so it just kind of caused me to now, like, I'm really just going back and diving into all sorts of games I either didn't finish as a kid or games I didn't play as a kid. Yeah. Like, I messaged you on the, you were doing a live stream the other day, and I had said like Final Fantasy Mystic Quest was a game that I like grew up playing, and then I said such fond memories of it, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna replay that. So I replayed it over the weekend with like a fast forward option, and I'm like, this game sucks.
It's like, what did I think whenever I was younger?
Yeah. So are there any games like that? Any games that now you're replaying it and you're like, you take the rose colored glasses off and you're like, this game sucks. Yeah.
Not recently, no. Whenever it comes to games, whenever I play stuff, I try to play stuff for the first time because I like to experience that with my audience and myself. That way they have my genuine reaction to things. So I can't say that I've replayed something like recently that I played as a kid that I'm like, man, this game sucks ass. No, not yet. I've experienced stuff that does suck, but not anything that I played as a kid. It's just like, whenever I play Final Fantasy VI for the first time, I only played it within the last couple of years. I didn't play it growing up. I played the PS1 port. Dude, that made my top three because it was that good. And it made me want to buy the Super Nintendo version of it. And I do have, that's one of the ones I have complete in box just because that game made an impact on me. So.
Yeah. The Final Fantasy collections on PlayStation 1 are great, like Anthology and Chronicles and stuff like that, because that's actually how I played Chrono Trigger for
first
time was on there, and then with the cutscenes and everything, and it's just I was like, oh my god, this is epic, so good. Yeah. And you know, another game, and I think that I originally, when I saw you posting on TikTok, where I was immediately, I was like, oh yeah, she knows what she's talking about, was when you were talking Legend of Dragoon, because I am an enormous, enormous Legend of Dragoon fan. I mean, it's my number one. So last year I bought a PlayStation 5.
Because
I wanted to play Final Fantasy 16, and my gaming PC had died. So I was like, all right, I'm primarily a Mac user. And so I was like, all right, I kind of really only use my gaming PC for gaming anyway. So I was like, I'm going to kind of go about this two different ways. So I bought a PlayStation 5, and then I bought an ROG Ally, you know, like the Steam Deck. Okay. And so I can like play games on the go and stuff like that. So I was like, well, I'm going to get Final Fantasy 16 because that's the game I really want to play. So I get Final Fantasy 16, and because I kind of stopped playing when the Switch came out, it kind of shut down PS4 for me, because I was like, this is great, because now I can play on the couch, and like I went really hardcore.
Yeah.
So hardcore into the Switch, and I sort of stopped playing as much PlayStation 4, and then I was just playing a lot of those games on PC. But when I got my PlayStation 5, I booted it up. I literally installed Final Fantasy 16. And while it's installing, I'm like looking around and I'm like, oh, Legend of Dragoon's on here.
Yeah.
Oh, I can get a platinum trophy in Legend of Dragoon. Right. And so still haven't played Final Fantasy 16. And I immediately just blitzed through Legend of Dragoon to be like, this is a game I must have the platinum trophy in.
Yeah. See, that's the same way with me. Whenever they announced that they were going to put trophies with LOD, I was like, what? That made me so hype, and I was so happy that I was able to buy it, you know, on its own, because I have PlayStation Essentials. I'm a cheap ass. I don't want to pay like for the top tier.
It's stupid price. Yeah,
I know. So at least they gave us that, because I know that Dino Crisis, since you mentioned, you know, trophies and stuff like that, I'm a big Dino Crisis fan, especially the first one. I cosplayed Regina, you know, for crying out loud. I love the game. Apparently, they're not going to do trophy accessibility for it. They're not going to let people buy it individually, because it's only for the highest tier, which is premium, for at least for now, from what I'm seeing. I'm like, Capcom, what the hell are you doing? People were so excited to play it and have accessibility, and now they can't buy it on their own like they could LOD for $10, which is what I did. But, you know, I like the fact that they're bringing retro to modern consoles like that and having the trophy accessibility. But at the same time, some companies are locking that in to where you can't pay premium price for it, which I think is stupid.
Yeah. So. Well, as a Capcom shareholder, I will see what I can do about that. See if I can say something.
Thank you.
So Dino Crisis I love as well, and I really hope that it gets the treatment like that they did with the Resident Evil remakes, the 2 and 3, and have you played the Resident Evil 4 remake?
I have actually been playing it. I haven't finished it yet.
Okay, and so are you enjoying it more than the original? No.
I'm still meh. Still don't like RE4, so it's not changing my mind. It looks graphically pleasing. I will give it that. It does look good, you know, with the engine that they're using, but that's all I'm going to give it. So even the merch is not. The one thing I will say, I've told everybody this, and I made this plainly clear. The only thing I like about RE4 is the merchant. Why are you buying?
You're right. Yeah.
I love him. I don't like him in the remake as much. I don't know what it is. He just seems kind of flat, but that's just me.
Yeah. But Ashley is much more toned down.
She is, but she's still annoying.
I will say this. For a long time, Resident Evil 4 was what I thought was the best in the series and my favorite game in the series. And then when they did the Resident Evil 2 remake, I don't know, man. I just like, the more I play the Resident Evil 2, like, because I think the Resident Evil 4 remake is excellent, but I think Resident Evil 2 remake might be the best game in the series. It's just more scary. It's zombies and not the Plagas. And
The Plagas thing got me. I didn't really care for that. I mean, whenever it comes to Resident Evil, you know, I'm an OG player. So zombies, you know, I know that they had to go in a different direction to save the franchise because it was going downhill and sales were going in the tank. But, you know, it didn't go in a way that I personally prefer, because I've been a big fan of RE since the beginning. My first one I ever played was RE2 on N64. That scared the shit out of me whenever the crawling across the window and then going through and seeing it, like, nope. I turned off the TV and ran like a bat out of hell out of the room because it scared the shit out of me. But we eventually did beat it. Me and my brother did because we rented it from Blockbuster.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Younger. So that was my first introduction to RE. And then, of course, naturally play 1, 3, and then so on and so forth. There's still a lot I haven't played, you know, like some of the off stuff like Dead Aim. I still haven't got to play that. I played Survivor. Honestly, I think Survivor is like way, even though it's first person, I find it way scarier than like 7 or anything else. 7 tried to bring back the survival horror aspect, but I don't really care for winners or anything.
Yeah, you know, I really don't care for 7 or 8. Even when they added third person, I don't know. I think it's just because it's too much like Outlast. You know, it's
play.
Yeah, well, Outlast is freaking scary. but yeah, you know what I mean? It's too much like that new. I mean, I'm glad it exists because I think that's one of the best things about the Resident Evil franchise is that it has so many different types of games that there is something for everyone. But 7 and 8 just are not for me. Yeah.
Correct. I agree. I'm the same. I think that 8's actually going on the same track that 4 did. But that's just my personal opinion. Yeah. I think go back down that same kind of rabbit hole that it did before. So.
Yeah. So what's your, so what is your favorite Resident Evil, I guess, if you're going to say 3?
Mm-hmm.
The classic, the original.
Yes, not the remake. No.
Yeah.
The remake's horse shit. No. I hated the remake. I really did. Yeah, RE3 has always been my favorite. Jill Valentine's one of my favorite characters. Nimi is my favorite big boy. I love him. He's so adorable. And I like how he chases you. Stores. I'm a huge RE3 fan.
Yeah.
So definitely my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great, too. You know, they're actually releasing, they're re-releasing those on GOG games right now. It's sort of like a PC version of it. Because those games are kind of weird because there's so many different ways to play them. Because you have like the PlayStation 1, Dreamcast, and GameCube. Right. And I've seen tons of breakdowns of people arguing every which one is different and stuff like that. But I kind of might lean to the PS1.
Well, that's the thing. I've never actually played the Dreamcast or the GameCube version of RE3. I want to, but I've only grew up playing, you know, the PS1 version of the original. So I'm not really sure how, like, one's more often than the other. But,
yeah, people,
you know, they have their preference.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's such an interesting, it's just interesting because it's like, it's one of those things where it comes to, like, games, like the PS1, really, when you look at games that come out of, like, the PS1, the 64 and the Dreamcast, because like the Dreamcast, its library is really more sort of like a better looking PS1. Right. Like there are some games that later stretched out into that next generation, which I know people consider it part of like the, you know, GameCube, PS2. I've always still like in my head, I am always like, no, it's really more in like the 64 PlayStation one. Right. Like one I always like Dino Crisis, where it's always like, even though it looks better on the Dreamcast, there's still something I like more about the PlayStation 1 version because of that. Like, it's like the polygons add like a level of like sort of like scariness to it.
Oh, yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that because sometimes the graphics, they can play a role in like how like it immerses you in that survival horror game. I get that. The only game I think of people that I've recently talked about that kind of has like the outlier between like N64 Dreamcast and then PS1 is Shadow Man. Now, I've only played the PS1 version, but that game is janky as hell. It's not really the graphics that's like the janky part. It's the controls. It's like you move this way, you go this way. It's just awful. But people say that the optimal way to play is N64 or Dreamcast, but I've not played either. And they said the remaster fixes all the control issues. So that's one thing that I can think of that people have different opinions on as far as games across the ports. Is that
I think Shadow Man just hit the Switch online. I think it literally just came out on the Switch. I'm pretty sure about that. I think it just came out on that the N64 online portion of the Switch. So if you have a Switch, then you have Switch online, then it's there. You go. You can check it out.
I can see what it's like.
Yeah. So okay. Well, just real quick, but before we move off of Resident Evil here, my favorite, well, besides the 2 remake, my favorite of the survival horror ones, and I kind of a lot of people criticize me for this, but I don't know. I just like it. What are your thoughts on Resident Evil Zero?
I like Zero.
I do.
It was fine. Yeah. I like the chambers. I like the story. I like, even though it's a little bit different, I still liked it. You know, some people have an issue with Code Veronica as well because they think it's too hard, but I
think Code Veronica is like amazing. Yeah.
I do too. I don't know. People just have a beef with it. You know, if anything's a little bit different, I mean, I guess that goes into context with me with RE4. It's like took a different direction. I don't like it. But some people, you know, like I said, they have problems like that with, you know, RE0 and then Code Veronica as well. So,
yeah. Yeah. Code Veronica, what's really interesting is that Code Veronica, Resident Evil 3, and Dino Crisis were essentially like Capcom released all these games kind of at like the same time.
Right.
And so it's kind of like, in a way, it's like you can see all the different teams taking the elements that had worked in Resident Evil 1 and 2 and be like, well, we're going to go in this direction. We're going to go in this direction and we're going to go in this direction. So I've always kind of viewed them oddly as like its own little mini trilogy because like they were in development at the same time. Like piggybacking off of Resident Evil 2 and 1 and being like, we're going to go in these different directions. And I think a lot of what actually happened in those games, you can see like in Resident Evil 4, you know, it's like, okay, this worked in Dino Crisis. This worked in Resident Evil 3 and this worked in Resident Evil Code Veronica. And like a lot of that stuff got shoved into like Resident Evil 4. But at that point, maybe the formula wasn't as, you know, I don't know. It's interesting.
It just didn't work for me personally, but it did for a lot of people. A lot of people.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. With Resident Evil 4, do you want to touch base on one thing?
Sure.
A lot of people like RE4 because it was their first one. That's what I found out coming over the years of doing social media and stuff. That's one of the biggest things that they have said. It was my first one and I love it. And when they go back and play the original trilogy or whatever, or anything else like Code Veronica, they don't like it because the tank controls, they don't like fixed camera angles. I'm like, well, a lot of us grew up with the OG, so we find that to add to the atmospheric thing to make it scary. And people just don't understand that. So it kind of like goes both ways. Like OG, some OG players do like RE4, but a lot of the majority that do like RE4 or are people that have played it, that was their very first one. I just want to touch base on that.
For sure. Yeah. You know, I will say this because I replayed it a bunch and then we'll move back to collecting and stuff. Sure. But I did want to talk to you about it because I'd love to talk to people about Resident Evil. And so is RE4, the original, and this is one of the things this is actually the thing I think that the remake does best, is the original is so over the top. I mean, it's not as over the top as Resident Evil 5, of course. Right. You know, that like Resident Evil 5, they're like, let's just, and then Resident Evil 6, they're like, no, we can still go like more over the top. But I think that's one of the things the remake really did well was it actually toned down a lot of like, you know, like being like crazy over the top and stuff. Like, I mean, you're at one point you're running from like a giant, like, you know, when you're in the mansion, you're running from like the giant, like Colossus statue thing. Yeah. I mean, it's like crazy over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. So we'll go back to collecting a little bit here. Yeah. So, what would you say? I know a lot of people love to use the term hidden gems, but we'll kind of go maybe a slightly different direction here. If somebody was going to be collecting, and we'll take price out of it, we'll just talk sort of like favorite games. What would you say are some sort of those, like, you know, you think like the B-side of an album, like not the essential games that like everyone would play, like your Metal Gear Solid or your Crash, like what would be that next tier of games if you were to recommend to somebody who's like, look into the PlayStation library or collect?
Okay. Well, as far as that, you know, I'm going to voice out RPGs because I'm an RPG girl, number one genre. So that's going to be what we're going to hit first. So Thousand Arms is definitely one I would recommend people to check out. You know, it's an Atlas produced title. Atlas made, you know, produced and made such great titles across the board. And I didn't know they had a hand in that one until, you know, I finally got it. I'm like, oh, Atlas. Okay. And I loved it. It's a dating simulator /RPG, and it's got like three different types of graphics. You know, you have like anime cutscenes, you have like the 3D rendering, and then you have like the overworld aspect too. So it's definitely a different trek whenever it comes to RPGs. That's one I would recommend. And then of course, Legend of Gaia is another one I would recommend. If you're an LOD fan like you and I, you're gonna like the actual kind of like the art form and also the battle mechanics for that game, because whenever you like switch like armor, it changes with the character. So that's one unique thing that brings to the table. And then you also have that hyper arts too, which is a different battle mechanic. So pretty much you're like, you're having input like different codes, kind of like you're like fighting, but then you attack the enemy. It's just a unique spin on, like, you know, battle mechanic, kind of like LOD with the additions. So that's one other one that I could recommend people check out too. Now, I'm trying to think along the lines of survival horror. I will say Galarians is one mm-hmm. that I recommend that a lot of people don't mention, but I will give you forewarning on that one. Is a little bit different because you have, like, you know, you have like a meter to where if you let it go too high, your character goes berserk, and if you don't have the correct formula to actually give your character, I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, then you pretty much are gone. He'll like go crazy and then you're game over. So it's a very cool game to play. Have you heard of Galarians before?
Yeah, well, yeah, the funny thing about it is it's one of those games, you know, before the internet where everyone like came up with a correct pronunciation, because I've always called it Galarians.
Really?
Yeah, like, and I feel like everyone I've ever talked to has called it that, and so I'm like,
yeah,
you know, now that I look at it, I don't know the actual correct way to pronounce that. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like Legend of a Gaia. I said Legend of Legia for the longest
I've seen time. That too, yeah.
Second one first before I played the first one. I didn't like Dual Saga that much on PS2. And whenever I finally played the first one a few years ago for the first time, I loved it. I'm like, they're like, you're saying it wrong. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, it's Legend of Legaia, not Legend of Legia. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I finally got told how to say that one, but no one's really corrected me on Galarians yet as far as that goes.
But maybe I'm wrong. You might be correct. I could 1000% be incorrect on that. Yeah.
I think as long as you enjoy the game, who gives a
for
hell?
Sure.
Yeah. Just play and go.
Yeah.
As far as platformers, the Pandemonium games, I've only played the first one, so I can speak for that one. It's definitely a different take. It is a little bit challenging. There is a number two, but I've not played it yet. So
that was actually one of the first games I played for PlayStation 1. Was
Pandemonium.
Pandemonium. My brother had the PlayStation 1, and I'd you know, sneak into his room and play it. And it was Bloody Roar, Pandemonium, and Monster Rancher.
You know, I've never played Monster Rancher before.
So good. Although I would say it's one of those games that now, well, I will say this. There is something novel about playing Monster Rancher today. Mm-hmm. Is that the coolest feature in it was that you could unlock all these different monsters by using CDs. So you'd like open your PlayStation. Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. You open your PlayStation, insert a CD, and it has like however it reads it, it reads some code and it'll give you a different monster.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's so cool. I will say this though, is that if you're going to play it today, you pretty much are better off playing. They did like a remaster or whatever, and it has like, you can basically now just like pick whichever CD you want. And it, like, even on today's, it's like you know, I mean, it's like CDs from the 90s, of course, so it's like you'll be like looking and it'll be like, oh, here's like the Backstreet Boys CD, and it'll give you like this, like, it's so sweet, it's so sweet, it's so crazy. But there was something super cool about that, so yeah. I think it is still something that's probably like, it's still pretty cool to experience that today if you want to do that.
For sure. I'll definitely will check it out whenever I get those. That's like it going for a full set of PS1 games. I'm still, you know, missing at least about, I think, 500 and some. I'm at 789 right now. There's 1,284 for the PS1 library for NTSC. So I'm over halfway. So
yeah,
freaking long.
Okay. All right. Well, here, have you, I guess I'll ask you some of the games I grew up playing. I'll ask you and we'll see which you think. Have you played, and a game that I think is a total hidden gem, Roscoe McQueen Firefighter Extreme? Have you played that?
Yeah, I want to though. That's on one of my playlists. Haven't played.
Yeah. It. Yeah. That game, honestly, that's a game I bought a while back because I had played it when I was a kid and booted it up, and I was like, man, this game, like, nobody talks about this game.
Yeah.
And it's a lot, like, a lot of people, anytime you look up a hidden gems list on the Super Nintendo, one of the first games that everyone always says is the Fireman, just because it was like a PAL release.
Oh, okay.
It is a super cool game. Like, don't get me wrong. It's a super cool game. But Roscoe McQueen for the PlayStation 1, like, the character definitely had some, like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, his personality would be like Johnny Bravo. I think would be like sort of thing. But it's cool. It's like an action platformer, but it's got this, the way the camera looks is it's almost reminds me of like Metal Gear Solid, like that sort of like above top type of a thing. But it's just such a quirky. Like, that's what I love about the PlayStation 1. I mean, the N64's library is so small that there's just not a lot of games like you saw on the PlayStation 1, you know, where you're going through, like, you go back through like a rental store, right? And you'd see all those games, like, you know, like Gex or what's the Blasto or you know any of those all those PlayStation 1 games, but Roscoe McQueen totally fits into that category.
Real.
Yeah. Okay, some other ones. Bravo Air Race. Have you ever played that?
Nope. I do have it though. Haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, that's sort of another unique. That's definitely another game. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, you could maybe argue Pilot Wings, but yeah, that's definitely what I know. I remember you were doing definitely doing a little bit on demo discs there for a bit.
I have quite a few, yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I played it originally was on a demo disc. That's something I mean, obviously you're not going to make it come back because now you can just download demos, but that was definitely a unique thing about the PlayStation 1 was the demo discs.
Yeah. There's like different versions of demo discs. There's like the PlayStation Magazine. There's the official PlayStation Magazine. There's a PlayStation Underground jam packs. There's the interactive sampler CDs. There's a lot. I have almost all the interactive sampler CDs. I'm missing 1, 11, and 12. I think 10 are the only three that I still need to get. And some of the actual demos can be expensive. I think the first one is like $25, but the most expensive demo I've ever seen is the Best Buy Greatest Hits variant. That thing is $300.
Yeah.
Why? I don't have that one yet, but maybe one day I'll, you know, fork up the cash for that. But for a demo, that's a little bit much for me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think it was PlayStation Underground, and I'm trying to remember because this is something I tried to search the other day and I couldn't find anything on it, but I have this vague memory. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Okay. Didn't some of the PlayStation Underground demos essentially have like on the demo, you could like download something to your memory card and it either worked as like a cheat. It worked as a cheat, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them. Yeah. They have that capability. Yeah. Some of them do. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, well, cheat codes for certain games that you can actually do that with. Yes, that is correct. For the PlayStation Underground exclusively for that, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember that, and I was like, man, nobody else. That's such a cool idea, and it never, I obviously never went anywhere, but.
I know, I miss those. I miss having, like, the previews of, like, the games, playing the demos, having those little extras with that, even seeing, like, behind the scenes things with, the developers and things like that. I love that kind of thing. I miss demo discs so much. That was one thing that we had that I wish we still did.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no way to kind of bring it back or certainly, like, I mean, I think now it in the spirit of it is like there are some games where you can download the demo. Right. I just remember I think like Octopath Traveler had that where you could download the demo and then your save would carry because you need to play the first whatever. Is. Yeah, your save would carry. So I think that like that's still kind of cool. But I do think it'd be cool if you got like some sort of special item for doing it. Now it's all tied up in, you know, microtransactions and
yeah, I know. I hate microtransactions. I know that they're essential for like free to play and stuff like that, but it's just, I feel like my wallet's burning a hole through itself whenever I see those things.
Yeah. Well, when you're, you know, collecting as much PlayStation 1 games as you are, I'm sure your wallet has an enormous hole in it in the first place. So.
Oh yeah, it does. Yeah. I just spent like $315 on Drawn Bond. I'm like, oh, but it's a good deal because it's about $500 for that game.
Yeah. Oh, and you went to Torg, right? The Columbus one?
I did. Yeah, I did. Yep. I sure did.
Nice. Yeah, what all did you pick up there?
I picked up several things. I actually have some of them over here. I have like Lucky Luke, this one. I just clean these, by the way. I'm still cleaning stuff. I picked up Extreme Go-Kart Racing. Don't play this. Don't play it. It's a weird type of racing game. I didn't think it would be what it is. So basically, you don't just do races. You have to meet certain goals before you can even proceed to the next track. It's like you have to get through this lap in 45 seconds. I'm like, what? It's different. I've never seen anything like it. I like what it's doing, but it's just not really well made, I guess. It's a very challenging one. So if you want challenging, definitely play that one if you're glutton for punishment, but I don't recommend it. Yeah. Escape or Die Trying. This is another one that I picked up. I didn't know what the heck that was. Basically, you could pick 4 characters to go through the like the worlds. I think there's like 15 levels, and you're going after the Green Pearl. And it's like a really weird kind of.
I'm pulling it up right here. Yeah.
It's kind of strange. And then of course I picked a Buzz Lightyear of Star Command. It's just like a title platformer. You know.
I've actually the other day I saw some people playing that on TikTok and they had like, you know, like hundreds of people in there, like in their live stream. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Holy crap. I mean, I was just playing it the other night because that's what they wanted to see on Twitch. I'm like, okay. And it was fun. I didn't complete it though, but we might actually go back and do it maybe one day. You know, I like to play stuff and do like one stream wonders. And if I jive with the game, I'll play it again. So.
Yeah. And so, and you were streaming on TikTok and then now, yeah, and then a while back, I remember you switched to Twitch. Do you think you like that more?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I like Twitch. Yeah. Twitch. Yeah. TikTok is fun. It was, but then it became kind of odd because people kind of got weird on there. Yeah. But Twitch is a little bit more, you know, of a better community. I mean, I'm not saying TikTok's not good or anything like that. I love my TikTok followers. Don't get me wrong, but there's people that come in there that aren't my followers that start stuff. And it's so easy. Yeah. You say one thing out of line, like, you know, me, I'm like that. Right. And it, people don't like that. And it's going bye-bye. But with Twitch, you have categories to where like, if you, you know, you do use excessive language, like profanity, like me, cause you know, I get my rage modes, then, you know, it's fine. But TikTok, they don't have that kind of thing. So that's why I think it's a little bit more user-friendly for me on Twitch versus TikTok these days. So,
yeah, I think you did it the right way because, you know, from what I found is because I was like, man, I was like TikTok is where I have a large following.
Right.
And I was like, this is just where I should stream. But I think that actually I think streaming on TikTok is good when you're starting because of the way it forces you into people's categories. So you'll get seen. But I do think that once you hit a point, you should move off of it. I think it's best to kind of build a following to then take them somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I kind of did essentially. You know, I grew my following and then I would always be like, hey, you know, I'm on Twitch. I would always like gear it toward Twitch and I still do that. You know, I'll pop on, I haven't popped on TikTok in a while, but I will pop on YouTube. I just mainly do like what we're doing right here. Just talk, you know, show pickups, you know, say hi to everybody because not everyone has Twitch. I get that. But I like, if you want to see me play games, it's going to always be on Twitch because that's just, you know, my platform. Easy. With and it's easier, you know, to, you know, deal with things, and there's a lot of perks to streaming on Twitch versus, you know, other platforms. So
yeah I would say if you really want to get into live streaming and that's where your like real focus is, I would say Twitch is, it just has so many more features and stuff like that. Yeah. That's just the best. Exactly. But I think TikTok is it's good for building a following, but I don't think it's great for I don't know, for like if you specifically want to like live stream.
I agree with that. Yeah, only starting out, and then whenever you get up there, move on to another one, you know, but still make videos, still do your thing and interact with your audience, because not everyone's going to move over to another platform. They may eventually, but you never know. So
yeah absolutely. Okay, some other questions here. Modern games, what are you playing? Anything modern that you're kind of been diving into?
The recent thing that, well, I, like I said, I was playing RE4 Remake, but I put that on hold because Silent Hill 2 Remake came out. So naturally, I'm a big Silent Hill girl. I love, honestly, I made the shift from Resident Evil to Silent Hill just like recently because I feel like more Silent Hill brought more to the table than RE has in the last like at least 10 years for me. So I've kind of shifted gears now that I played more of the Silent Hill franchise. Because I had never played Origins or The Room before until, like, you know, last year. And I fell in love with those games. More so The Room than Origins. Origins is its own thing. But Silent Hill 2 Remake is the one I've recently beaten and played. And I gave it a 7 out of 10. So that's I don't really play a lot of new gen stuff. I just don't have time where I'm, you know, constantly trying to, you know, get ready for, like, retro streaming. And, like, I'm playing RPG, so I have to grind out levels. If not, I'm going to die.
Right.
So... that's where most of my free time goes, is trying to grind through RPGs. And then, you know, I stream like 3 days, 3 to 4 days a week. So it's like not always RPGs. That's like normally on Friday. And sometimes I'll do like another one, but it just depends on what time I've got. So that's the most recent thing I played. Everything else is a backlog right now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The backlog, it just grows and grows and grows. It just is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it totally just is. I will say that I have found like, the ROG Ally, which, you know, I play on, which is, you know, similar to the Steam Deck, has made everything a lot easier me in terms of diving in. Yeah, because just like the Switch, but I can dive into my Steam library, you know, and play a lot of that stuff and just kind of like hammer down. But now I have a baby, so it's like I stream when I can. I, you know, do stuff when I can.
Whenever you can.
Yeah, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes here, just kind of, you know, whatever makes it work. So, okay, cool. Yeah. So okay, so you went to Torg. That's in Columbus. I'm actually from Ohio originally. I was kind of looking at that one, but now I live in Portland, so I often go to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, which is huge. I saw you met Metal Jesus. How was that?
He was cool. I didn't really get to talk to him very long. He was literally, he was at the guest table and he was about to get up and leave. I'm like, hey, how are you? I'm like, can I get a photo? He's like, yeah. And he was chill. We just talked for a little bit. And then, you know, he was cool. And then he had him, I went out, he went on his way. I didn't really want to hold him up. Thing, but it was cool to actually just catch him like that, not wait in the line like that. I got lucky like that with Reggie too. Reggie was eating lunch. I was eating lunch. I'm like, we were looking at each other like, who are you? I'm like, oh, Reggie, hey. So I got a photo with him and talked to him for a few minutes. So I kind of lucked out, I guess, with meeting everybody because everybody was like off to themselves and there was no line. I'm like, luck is on my side today. But he's a cool guy. Everybody.
Yes. Yeah, so I met him at Portland Retro Gaming Expo, and it was kind of the opposite experience. Not that he wasn't cool or anything, but I sort of was like walking in, and I was like, okay, this is cool. And I was like, saw some people that I knew walking by and stuff like that. And I literally turned around, and he's like standing right behind me. And so like, so I'm just like starstruck. And it was I'm sure it was an extremely awkward experience for him. Cause I was like, I'm like, oh my God, you're Metal Jesus. And then like, we're kind of in line together, and it was just weird. And then I think he was just like, okay, like leave me alone, buddy. I was like, so
I didn't really starstruck with them too much. I mean, I just went in there with myself. I don't know why. I just wasn't scared of anything. I'm like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah. I think had I not like turned around and he was essentially like standing right behind me, it would have been like less awkward. But yeah, that definitely happened. So hopefully in the event I ever meet him again, he one forgets that you know, and two, it's a much better experience.
Yeah.
Okay. I know you said obviously you try to play as much on original hardware. Do you do any emulation at all or none?
Everything. Yeah. Console only, and I mainly stream PS1, PS2. Sometimes I'll occasionally do N64 and GameCube, but I haven't played anything on Dreamcast yet, but I plan to. So no emulation whatsoever. No.
That's cool. Hey, prop. Yeah. 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 Props to you. Are you, and yeah, so you don't, you wouldn't even, you wouldn't even do any of the stuff where it's like, you know, like I've seen people where they replace their disk drive and like the Dreamcast, have you seen that? And I've seen that with the GameCube as well, where people like replace their disk drive with like an SD card, so in a way you're still playing
like the X Station for PlayStation
1. Yeah, they might have one something like that. Yeah,
I've thought about getting one of those for PlayStation just as a display piece, but I would never use that for streaming because why spend all this money on collecting and just let it sit? I'm not that kind of collector. I want to play myself since I spend, you know, hundreds of dollars across the board on. There's no reason to let us sit here and collect dust. Yeah, that's one thing I think that they talked about at Torg. I didn't go to the panel, but I think that's one thing that Metal Jesus and Reggie were talking about is like emulation and preservation of games. I understand that, you know, emulation is a good thing, you know, for a lot of people, especially since if they can't afford to buy the games because gaming is expensive, you know, it's an expensive hobby or whatever the case across the board with that. But if you're going to pay for stuff like that, why not enjoy it while it's here? Because disc rot is real. It's happened to be. So why not enjoy what we had whenever we were younger and we're paying for it? So play it, pay to play.
Yeah. I agree. I do. I will say I do a lot of emulation. A lot of it is just because like I want to capture gameplay footage or something really quick. And so it's just like, cause I do a lot of shorts and, you know, TikTok and stuff like that. So it's like, I just need like a minute of gameplay footage and it's just so easy for me to just like, all right, click or whatever. Or I do, you know, do it digital. Yeah. Via Steam or something like that,
right?
But that one of the things in that same realm that I'm like, people who are like, oh, I want like a sealed copy of a game, you know, except for maybe something like that's just that I would consider to be like a holy grail type of a thing, like, you know, if I could get a sealed copy of like a Link to the Past or something, okay, I'm probably gonna leave that in the box. But I just don't it's not really about keeping my game sealed because I want to play them.
Same. The only reason why my games are sealed is if either I've had to rebuy it, of course, and I played it before, I just haven't opened it to replay it. I bought it new and just haven't gotten to it yet. Or I found it that way and I already have an open copy. It's just like, you know, I have a copy of My Disney Kitchen. One of the weirdest games on PlayStation 1, basically, is like a cooking simulator. I'm almost thinking like Cooking Mama, but Disney. It's an awful thing whenever it comes to games. Trust me, don't play that, it's not worth it. But like a buddy of mine, Matt, he gave me a sealed copy of that just because he's like, it's my most prized possession. He was just being silly with that, but I have an open copy of it. I'm not going to open it unless I have to, unless something happens to my other one. So, and I have a sealed copy of Tomb Raider 3. But again, I just happened upon these things. So if I want to open them a wheel, I don't see any point in keeping sealed stuff, you know, because it's there to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I know a lot of people are into that. And then people want to grade games and stuff like that too. And it's just like, if I were to ever get a game graded, you know, right. which I do have some sealed copies of some games, you know, like I have a sealed copy of Xenoblade Chronicles, just mm-hmm. because for the Wii, mostly just because I bought it and then I kind of like never got around to playing it. And then right. they re-released it on 3DS and stuff. So I'm like, well, I'm going to play that version. So it's just, but right. you know, it's like, but I don't want to sell it. So I don't plan on getting it graded. You know, it's just because right. if I get something graded, then it's like locked inside of a box. And then I don't know.
With it. I mean, it's just going to sit there to look pretty. I'm like, why spend all that money for something? Games are made to be played.
Yeah. Same thing with comics. Like, cause I definitely got into comic collecting for a bit. Like I'm a huge Batman fan and you know, I have like all the graphic novels essentially. And I'm just like, but it's because I want to read it. Like I want to pull it off the shelf and dive through it. I mean, I don't want to just sit there for the sake of sitting there.
Yeah. I don't blame you. Yeah. Get a game off the shelf, play it, pop that thing in and go and have fun. Don't just let it sit there and just to, you know, pay. I don't even know how much it costs to grade something. I guess it just varies depending on what it is and who's through. I don't know, but I just think it's a money pit to do that. I mean, people have their own, you know, niche whenever it comes to collecting, more power to them, but that's not my thing.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I want to give you props for is that I think, and this was just, I think just sort of a toxic TikTok thing, but I think, and I have not used them myself, but I, you know, you kind of defended DK Oldies quite a bit.
I did.
Yeah, and I guess from my standpoint is I just don't get why everyone's so up in arms. It's like, are you running a business where you're like manning all of these games? And you know what I mean? I generally do not get like why people are like so aggressively hatred towards that company.
I don't know either. I've been buying from DK Oldies for almost, I want to say going on 3 years now. They're the only company besides, like, I just started using Easterlin, so I can't really say too much about them because I've only bought one thing, but they were phenomenal. I've been buying from Lukey Games too. It was the opposite with Lukey Games versus DK. DK, I've never had a problem with. I bought across the board. I'm talking cartridge. I'm talking disc. I've never bought a console from them. I don't need to, so it's just mainly games, but everything's been packed well. Everything works great, in great condition. I don't know why people have such a, you know, get
like,
stuff. It's just ridiculous versus, you know, like Lukey Games. I've had the opposite happen to me. I've ordered a black label. I got green label. I've gotten cases. I literally just bought like three PS1 games, but all three cases were broke.
Yeah, I saw your post about that. Yeah.
They responded to me. And they sent me three cases that looked like they came from the Dollar Tree. And one of them had like residue. I'm like, okay, that was it for me with Lukey Games. I will not be buying nothing else from them for a while. I'm taking a hiatus from them.
Yeah.
But they're not worth it. I would rather pay more to a company and get premium, you know, service versus that half-ass shit that Lukey Games does. People get mad with DK about their pricing. Well, they have to understand that DK Oldies,
it's a business.
It's a business. They have overhead. They have employees. They have, you know, they have to buy a product. There's a lot of things to take into accountability whenever it comes to, you know, an actual business. It's just like whenever you go to a retro game store, their prices can be, you know, high, low, in between. It just depends on what they have and how they got it and how much they pay for it. People don't take into account whenever it comes to that. They just want to, you know, they just want to complain just to complain. I guess because they don't have the money to burn. Well, I mean, that's not my problem, dude.
Yeah. And also it's also, I think, something people miss out on because everyone looks at eBay for prices, but game stores, especially, it's also the market that you're in. Like, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, which is kind of like retro gaming central, right. You know, right. I mean, that's, I feel like it's just so massive out here. I would say this is kind of true for retro gaming in general, is a lot of people aren't into sports titles, but there are communities of people who are into like retro sports games because, you know, like they don't like this current state of Madden or, you know, where EA has basically just let the game just go to, you know, shit essentially. Right. I mean, you know, and they want to go back because everyone's like, I mean, if you go to any Reddit forum, everyone's like, what's the best Madden? Madden 2006. Right. You know, I mean, or college football, like 14. For example, which was the last college football game for a long time until they were able to release it this year because the college football, they had the licensing and the players couldn't get played. So if you go look that game, if you go look that game up, like a disc only sometimes goes for like $100 because it's so sought after, because it's the last college football game. And I love it. And I emulate it. And I bought it like on disc to play on my PS3. Cause it's also one of the best, games. But so that's also like what market you're in and stuff like that too. Like if a certain type of game is being really sought after and bought, and you live in an area where there's a lot of other collectors, like RPGs might be more expensive where you're at than they would be in other places.
Correct. That is true. And plus, you know, as far as like, you know, the print run two of the game as well, that takes into accountability. It's just like Tel Consorto. That's one game that I still don't have. I saw it at Torg, but they wanted $500 for it, which is what it's going for. I'm like, I just bought trombone. So I'm like, nah. So just, you know, some of those games, they're like limited print runs and stuff. And so people that are collecting the heavies, you know, a lot of them are going to hold on to them. And the ones that are out there floating, they're going to go for top dollar too. So it makes it even harder for us collectors to find stuff like that because of that. So there's another reason.
Yeah. Have you at all thought about, like, I know there's like a huge wave right now of people diving back in and wanting to play on CRT. Is that something you've thought about? Or
I have my CRT TV. Honestly, I didn't buy it to play on. I bought it to play VHS movies. It's a one that has a VHS built in. My buddy DMC, I don't know, do you know who DMC PCRT is? By chance, he's on TikTok as well.
It doesn't immediately sound familiar, but you know, on TikTok, it's one of those things where you just see him or you don't. Yeah.
One of the ones I actually got to meet at Torg. So he has glasses and things. He's a big CRT enthusiast, so he knows way more about them than me. He actually helped me find that TV, sent all the way from Michigan to here. So I've been looking for one specifically like that. It's a white one with the VHS built in. But as far as I don't really play on my CRT for like retro stuff. I have a flat screen in here that I do use, like that's hooked up with my PS2 and stuff like that. That's what I've been using. And I have I just got rid of my Commodore 1701. It was sitting in the floor. That's one of the ones that people like want to actually have. I actually just sold it to him, believe it or not. So that way I can get out of the floor, because I just don't have the room to put all these CRTs. Right. Like two more as well, but they're in the closet.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, hey, hold on to them, because the price on CRT is just skyrocketing right now. Yeah, that's something I've been kind of thinking more about getting into, just because I don't know. I feel like so many people are like, oh, it's just the best way to play with the scan lines and everything. So
yeah,
something I'm kind of considering. So I was like, you know, I'll ask her. Is she a CRT enthusiast?
Yeah, I am to an extent. I think they look cool. I think it's cool to have them. I mainly use mine. Like if I want to do a quick test on something, all you have to do is plug it in and go. You don't have to go. I have a setup specifically for, you know, my stream setup, and I don't want to mess with it. So I'll pop up one of my extra ones and just test the phone if I need to. So it's actually a convenient thing to have that on. But playing, you know, I typically don't do that right now. I may change my mind in the future, though. I mean, why not? Why not use it?
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. Well, hey, we'll close up here. But with one kind of last question for you. What's your not necessarily top five favorite, but like if you're like, man, I just want to sit down and play some PS1, what's your like five go-to games?
My five go-to: Legend of Dragoon, Tomba 2, RE3, and Lunar. And I probably would have to say either Crash Bandicoot Warped or Spyro Year of the Dragon. I have a thing for threes. For some reason, I like, you know, Spyro 3, Year of the Dragon, Crash Bandicoot 3, RE3.
It's the PlayStation 1 library. A lot of games, a lot of the third entry on the PlayStation 1 for a lot of franchises were kind of like the best.
Oh, yeah, for real. I mean, whenever it comes to like comfort stuff, Tomba 2 is one of the ones I like to play the most. I remember that's one of the ones I ran into the most as a kid whenever I was growing up, because my dad, like I said, he was a big gamer. So he would, you know, before I started saving my money and buy my own stuff, which I did in my teens, he would always buy stuff for Christmas, birthday, or himself, and we would just play whatever the hell we had. But that one, I remember renting that game so much, it was ridiculous. We had the first Tomba, but he would never buy the second one. And I finally was able to buy the second one with one of my very first paychecks that I had, because I was so in love with that. But, you know, I had to rebuy another copy a couple years later. But I bought that one without the manual because it was a lot cheaper. I think I paid about $75 for it whenever it goes for about $150. So I'm okay with, like, getting stuff without the manual, because I'm not one of these minty collectors. I think everything needs a home, whether it have a little, you know, crack in the case or have a little bit of wear and tear, because it gives a history, especially if it has, like, stickers on the stuff, like Electronic Boutique. Like, one of my copies of Lunar has one of those stickers on it, and I just bought a game. I think it was Spider Maker that has that same kind of sticker on it, because I think it's just nostalgic. But those are my five that I, and Dino Cry. Well, I'm going to throw one. Dino Cry.
Yeah.
I love playing that. I love the dinosaurs, pretty much Resident Evil, but with dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. I will say, yeah, with the stickers on games, there was a period of time where I was like trying to like take them off and stuff like that. And then it's just so much work. You got to get the hairdryer out and goo gone. And I'm just kind of like, it just is what it is.
Yeah, the only ones I take off are GameStop. Now, yeah,
they're easy to take off. And they're also stupid annoying because they're like large and.
Yeah, they're like this huge. Just like, you know, EB is like this small, like, oh, but the EB is more nostalgic for me. So I'm going to keep it because it's not around anymore. GameStop's still around and they're annoying. So I'm going to take those off. Yeah. Not really having on there. They're not, they're easier to
pick up. Have you been to one of the GameStop retro stores? Any good or?
Now, the one in Ohio was really small. It had quite a bit of selection, though, for PS3 if you're collecting for PS3. PS1, I think there was, like, one game. I already had it. But everything else, you know, it's, like, mainly new retro, like PS3, 360, stuff like that. And then the one I went to in Roanoke, though, Virginia, that one was massive. It had, I'm talking N64, PS1. It had, like, an N64 in the case. They had a lot of stuff. I guess it really just depends on the region on where you go as far as, like, retro GameStop. But that one had a great selection of stuff. I already had all the PS1 games, of course, because it's becoming a lot harder to find stuff I don't have.
Yeah.
Like that. But yeah, I definitely recommend checking out GameStop Retro, because I feel like it's actually a nice thing to have, considering a lot of people in these zones that don't have retro stores, like myself. I have to drive over 2 hours either way I go just to go to a retro store, so I don't go very often. And they just closed my GameStop too. So
wow. And you're in North Carolina, right?
No,
or you're in Virginia. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we don't even have a GameStop anymore here. So now the closest one to me is over, like, I think an hour and 30 minutes away from me now. So it's like, well, yeah, it kind of sucks. But that's just the way it goes. But as far as GameStop Retro, I feel like it's a good thing to have for people that's in between game stores, especially with, like, if they have that retro capability. I know that mine wasn't a GameStop Retro. That's not the one in Roanoke. This was a different one. They still carried, like, PS3 and stuff and Wii U. And I collect for Wii U, so it was actually a good thing for me to go pick up stuff there from time to time. So,
yeah, cool. Awesome. Well, all right. Hey, we just hit about an hour here. Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. This is such an absolute blast talking games with you. And where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me on YouTube at DG2009, DGGames2009 on Twitter. You can find me on TikTok at DG2009. And then, of course, Instagram, DG2009 as well. Everything's DG2009 across the board except for Twitter. Because somebody already...
Okay, cool. Awesome. Well, all right, guys. Remember, you can find me anywhere on the internet at Super Gains Bros. As always, for people watching, I want to say thank you for watching. People for listening, say thank you for listening. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.